Hey everybody, Ferg here. This past Friday was the 4-year anniversary of my combat episode on the podcast, which is the very first game episode I did. And also this past week I noticed on Facebook that I got over 1,000 likes, which is great. So thank you all for both of those things. It really means a lot to me that you're here with me taking this weird journey that we're taking. You know, it's got its highs and lows and everything, but in the end, you're still with me, and I greatly appreciate that. I'm glad I'm doing it, glad I'm still doing it. I mentioned on Facebook that the 1,000 likes is time for a contest. I do have a contest in mind. My friend Tim sent me some stuff to give away a while back, so I finally figured out, I think, a way I can do it. So I'll be going over that in the next episode. But for right now, this weekend, since it's the 4th anniversary weekend of the first combat episode, I listened to the combat episode a few months ago, and I had forgotten that I screwed it up. I did something weird to the sound, so I went back and I did what I could to remaster it and make it sound better. So this is just the, nothing special, it's just a 4th anniversary remix, or remaster, I should say, of the episode, just to commemorate the 4 years. So I don't usually commemorate anniversaries and stuff. I might mention it, but I don't usually do anything special. But I thought this would be, since I got the 1,000 likes on Facebook around the same time, I thought it would be fun to do this. So here's the remastered episode. I hope you enjoy it. It's a little rough because it was the first one, so please forgive me on that one. And I'll see you very soon with the Scuzzy Side episode. And again, thank you so much, everybody. I'm honored and I'm humbled to be doing this for you, and I'm glad that you all enjoy it. So here's the original combat episode remastered. Hi, folks. Welcome to episode 2 of the 2600 Game by Game podcast. I'm your host, Ferg, and in this episode, we will discuss Atari part number CX2601, Combat. Well, first of all, thanks to everybody who downloaded the show last week and all the positive feedback I've gotten. I'm really overwhelmed by it all. Thank you so much. I greatly appreciate it. I'm really excited to start talking about these games in the excruciating detail that you will come to love, I hope. That would be good if you love that, because there's a lot of excruciating detail in this episode. So, as you heard in episode 1, I have procrastinated a long time getting this podcast started. I had some notes started for the first three games. I started them a while back, and then I opened them up last week after I did the first episode. I opened up the combat notes, and I saw that the date they were started was March 3rd, 2010, and then later I realized I would be posting this show on March 3rd, 2013. So it's about damn time that I got this show out. Thank you for waiting for something you didn't know about. I also have, I want to thank some other people. I want to thank my new Twitter friend, George.
Hi, George.
Who offered his help with the show. Thank you very much, George. Also to Rob O'Hara, he also offered me some help with the show, which I greatly appreciate. And he's given me a lot of encouragement. And he also tweeted about my show last week, and it got me a lot more listeners. So thank you very much, Rob. I appreciate that. And I'm going to say appreciate a lot, so please get used to that. Rob O'Hara has, he does the You Don't Know Flag podcast, which is a great podcast on all sorts of retro things, mostly with a computer bent or a video game bent or whatever you want to call it, bent. The latest ep he just put out talks about actually the U.S. video game crash. So you can check that out at robohara.com. Please do if you haven't. It's excellent, excellent podcast, and Rob is a great storyteller. I'd also like to thank S1500 and RJ. S1500 on Atari Age started the Two Worthy Video Game podcast thread. It's been going strong for a while, and I've learned about a lot of new video game podcasts on there that I enjoy, some that I don't. And both S1500 and RJ have posted many suggestions about the shows that they've posted about and about podcasting in general that I've kind of taken to heart for this episode. And I outlined kind of what I was going to do in the last episode. Be family friendly, No swearing. I think that's the way to go. I do curse in real life, but I can rein it in for the podcast. So I think that'll get me more listeners that way. That thread was actually the first place I posted the first episode of this podcast. So thank you both, S1500 and RJ. Also, I'm not really a YouTube guy. I don't like to sit and watch videos, but I did find a guy on there that I like watching. It's called Arcade USA. He's got a ton of videos on there. He really likes handheld games, especially the Coleco tabletop games. He also does a lot of mods and stuff, which is really cool. There's a lot of Atari 2600 mods on there. I have a modded 2600. It's just an audio video, but it's mono. I do want to try. I have a few 2600s laying around, as you may expect. And I do want to try to make a stereo mod at some point. So he doesn't have that on there, I don't think. But he has a bunch of other mods, like how to fix paddles, how to put the those clicker switches in the joystick. What are they called? I forget now.
Micro switches.
But it's really, really cool videos. I enjoy watching them. That's at Arcade USA on YouTube. So please go check that out. Also, a little inside baseball about the podcast. I did say there wasn't going to be a co-host, but after last week's show, I was contacted by a guy named Gary, and he sounded really great and was really knowledgeable about the 2600. So I asked him if he would be on this week on the combat episode. He said yes, but unfortunately, he couldn't make it at the last minute. He was stuck in Kankakee without any internet, so hopefully he'll be on the next episode. And Gary, make sure you watch out for those Kankakee bull snakes. They're really bad this time of year. All right, let's start talking about Atari 2600 games with combat. Combat is a 2 kilobyte stereo cart. All 9 of the launch titles, which was a phrase that didn't exist at the time, were programmed in stereo. The Atari VCS, as it was originally known, until 1982 when the 5200 came out, the 2600 is the part number of the VCS, or video computer system. It was originally supposed to have 2 speakers in the unit itself, but it was taken out at the last minute, so the mono audio signal went through the TV. You can hear the game in stereo with a modded 2600 or the Stella emulator, which you will be hearing on the show. The left player sounds come out of the left speaker, and the right player sounds come out of the right speaker. It's a pretty neat effect if you're wearing headphones. So this was initially packed in with the VCS, and the release date was originally listed as October, and it was actually shown at the June 1977 Consumer Electronics Show with the VCS for the first time. The first newspaper ad for the VCS was on August 1st. It was for Long's Drugs, or Long's Drugs put out the ad. Pardon, I'm a little nervous about starting this podcast, so if I'm tripping over my words, I do apologize. The VCS with combat was $169.88, and the Air Sea Battle and Space Mission cartridge, which was later renamed Starship, were also in the ad for $17.88. There was also a ad in September 3rd from the Payless Drugstore. Same price as the Long's Drug ad, and all the other 8 launch titles were listed, but there are no prices given. There's also an ad on September 11th, 1977 in Macy's, and the unit itself was listed at $180. There's also the Sears Telegame Video Arcade System. That was the version of the 2600 or VCS that Sears released exclusive to their stores. I'll talk about that a little bit later. It was listed in the Wish Book that year at $178.95. For Sears, which is another thing I'll get into later, the name Combat was changed to Tank Plus, but it was not the pack-in for the Sears Telegames Video Arcade. So according to Michael Current's Atari Timeline, which is a really excellent site for finding out release dates and when things were being programmed, who got hired when, all that kind of stuff, I'll put a link to that in the show notes, 340,000 VCS units were sold in 1977, so that's not too bad for the first few months, I guess. Four or five months. So the game Combat for the 2600 is based on the game Tank by Key Games, the arcade game, which came out in 1974. If you didn't know, Key was a secret subsidiary of Atari, and it was founded to get around arcade game distribution exclusivity agreements. That's hard to say. Key made clones of Atari arcade games, but Tank was their first original game. Once it was found out that Key was part of Atari, Atari merged with Key, and Key's president, who was Joe Keenan, probably where Key comes from, became the president of Atari, but Key Games actually stayed in business until 1978. And this happened in 1974, the merger. There was a Key-branded VCS called both the Video Game System and the Programmable Game System. I think on the system itself, it's called the Programmable Game System, but Video Game System in some of the literature. It's very hideous. It's like an orange nightmare. I'll try to remember to put a picture in the show notes so you can take a look at it. It's, oh my gosh, if you haven't seen this thing, you got to see it. So Atari actually planned a Tank 2 dedicated console in 1977. The two back then in arcade games and dedicated consoles meant how many people could play it. It wasn't a sequel to Tank. It was how many people could play it. This console was actually canceled, but the joysticks that were, there was a prototype made of it. The production was canceled, but the joysticks that were made for the prototype became the model for the CX-40 standard joysticks that Atari put out with the VCS. The biplane and jet fighters portion of combat was based on the Atari arcade game Jet Fighter, which was released in 1975. And I'm thinking that the fact that it was named after Tank and Jet Fighter led to the Sears version being renamed Tank Plus instead of just Tank. So as I mentioned, this is a 2 kilobyte game, meaning the code could fit on one page or less full of text. The machine code for the game is available. I'll have a link in the show notes so you can look at it. The original VCS designers didn't plan for more than 4 kilobyte games. They figured the VCS would have a shelf life of about 3 years, so it was basically designed to play different Tank and Pong games. They didn't look beyond 4 kilobytes, but many later game designers were able to do amazing things with these limitations up to the present day. A lot of homebrews. And if you want to read more about this, like I said, I'm not a technical guy. I'm a baker. I don't know anything about programming. I know basic things that I'm able to understand. But there's a book called Racing the Beam by Nick Monfort and Ian Bogost, and that goes into all that stuff. And some of it I can get. Some of it I can't, but that's a really good book if you want to know anything about VCS programming. So ultimately, the game was designed by three programmers, Steve Mayer, Joe DeCure, and Larry Wagner, and it was designed concurrently with the design of the 26, or VCS, I should say, at this point. A prototype cartridge of the arcade game Tank was designed by Steve Mayer. He was the founder of Cyan Engineering, which was an engineering firm that Nolan Bushnell tapped to help with the development of the 2600 and eventually bought that firm. Steve was also responsible, along with Ron Milner, for developing the first prototype of the 2600. Like I said, I'm not going to go into any of the technical specs of the development of the 2600 because I don't really understand too well how it works. The core of what we now know as the combat cartridge was redesigned by Joe DeCure, while he also helped redesign the hardware and create the sound circuit on the television interface adapter, or TIA chip, which also provided the screen display and the input for the controllers. DeCure worked on the TIA chip with Jay Miner, who was the lead chip designer for the 2600. Joe DeCure started working for Atari in December of 1975, where he started by debugging the prototype system and cartridge created by Milner and Mayer. DeCure is an avid cyclist, and his bicycle at the time was a brand named Stella, which became the code name for the 2600.
Hey, Stella!
DeCure also programmed Video Olympics and was a member of the engineering team that developed the Atari 800 computer, which came out in 1979, I think. I know Earl Evans on RetroBits did a show on the Atari 800 computer, but that was quite a while ago. It would be neat if there was a specific Atari 800 podcast. If you have any interest in the 800 and you want to do a podcast or you want to hear a podcast, you got to do it. That's what I learned.
Remember when every classroom had a turtle?
But back to combat. The game was finished by Larry Wagner, who, in Joe DeCure's words, quote, did a great job of reinventing and productizing the combat cartridge, including Tank, Jet Fighter, and Biplane, unquote. Larry Wagner was hired by Atari in 1976 as the lead software designer. He hired 10 other software designers and later went on to become the head of Warner Communications Research and Development Lab. Nolan Bushnell had sold Atari to Warner by then. Larry Wagner also programmed Atari's video chess cartridge. The object of combat is, with tanks, biplanes, or jet fighters, shoot your opponent as many times as you can in 2 minutes and 16 seconds for the higher score. And the scores will blink in the last 16 seconds, so you know when the time's going to be up. I was reading on Digital Press in their rarity guide about the 2 minute and 16 second limit, because it also appears in some of the other games. I think Air Sea Battle is one. Mostly launch titles, maybe more than that. Well, we'll find out as we go. This actually was rooted in the arcades. They figured out that a typical player's attention span per level of game was 2 minutes, and they just used this in the VCS as well. And the reason that there's 16 extra seconds instead of just 2 minutes is because it takes less bytes to have the extra 16 seconds than it does to program 2 minutes into the game. So I'm glad I found this explanation now, so I didn't have to warn her about it for countless upcoming episodes. Thank goodness. So combat is a two-player game using the joystick controllers. You can play one player, but the other tank won't move. There's no AI in combat. The planes will move, but they just move in a straight line. The joystick moves your tank or the different airplanes depending on the game variation. In the tank games, you push up to move in whatever direction you're facing, push left to rotate the tank left, and push right to rotate the tank right. You can push up diagonally in either direction to rotate in a circle in that direction. Probably not the best idea in a two-player game to be rotating in a circle while the other player is shooting you. Pulling back on the stick has no effect. If you center the stick, the tank will not move. Push the button to fire your missile. The missile has to hit your opponent or an obstacle or disappear from the screen before you can shoot again. This actually doesn't apply to all the variations, which I'll get to in a minute. Whenever a tank or plane is hit, it spins around in place for a few seconds while the hit sound decays. And during this time, neither of the players can control their tanks. But in some cases, the tank that shot the other tank will continue moving a little bit. And it's always fun to watch what happens if it continues moving into a barrier. In the biplane games, the planes move automatically, and a centered stick is medium speed. You can control the speed by pushing right to go faster or left to go slower. Push up to dive. You're basically rotating clockwise if you keep the joystick pressed up. You can use the upper diagonals to dive fast or slow. Push down to climb. Again, it rotates counterclockwise if you keep the joystick pushed down, and you can alter the speed with diagonals. And again, to fire your missile, just push the button. The jet fighter games, oddly, the control for these games is different from the biplanes, but the center stick is still medium speed. You push up to go faster and down to go slower. You push right to rotate clockwise and the diagonals to the right to rotate fast or slow. Push left to rotate counterclockwise using the diagonals again for fast or slow, and push the button to fire. The difficulty switch will affect the range of missiles for each player in all games. If you have it on B, you have long-range missiles, which almost reaches across the whole screen, but not quite. And if you have it on A, you have shorter-range missiles. I looked at this. It's kind of hard to tell. It might be around two-thirds of the length of the long-range missiles. It doesn't look quite half to me. I could be wrong on that, but I just used my eyeballs to look at that. Also, an added difficulty in the biplane and jet fighter games. In position A, you'll fly slower than you do in position B. The TV type switch. If you're on a color TV, if you switch to black and white from color, the game will be in black and white. Black and white TVs were more prevalent back then. That's why they put this switch in there, I'm guessing, but I'm not sure how it would look if you switched to color on a black and white TV. I'm thinking maybe some of the colors would be hard to see, so they had to make it specific colors on the black and white version so you could actually see it on the black and white TV set. The game select will choose from 27 variations, which I'll get to in a minute. And the game reset will start or reset your game of combat. You have three different styles of missiles in combat. The straight missiles travel in a straight line. I bet you didn't know that one. And in the airplane games, there is a machine gun option, which are rapid-fire straight missiles. Lastly, there are guided missiles, which after you shoot the missile, you can steer it right or left by moving the joystick right or left. And your tank will also rotate while you're steering your missile. Now we'll get to the variations. Games 1 through 14 are the tank games, and in the tank games you have three different types of terrain. You have open field, easy maze, and complex maze. The open maze does what it says in the tin, as they say on Retro Gaming Roundup. The mazes are not really mazes. It's basically different shaped barriers that are symmetrical. Most of the early games had symmetrical screens because of the hardware limitations of the 2600, but there were workarounds that were found out later on by the programmers. The easy maze has a few barriers, while the complex maze has more barriers. That's all it is. So game one, you have an open field. Game two, you have an easy maze. Game four, you have a complex maze. And all these are guided missile games. Game three is an easy maze. Game five is a complex maze. And these two are straight missile games. Games 6 through 9 are tank pong. This is pretty weird. The missiles will bounce around the maze off the barriers. You have two different kind of hits in tank pong. The direct hit, of course, is self-explanatory. And a billiard hit, you have to bank the shot off of a barrier before you can hit your opponent. You hit your opponent straight on in a billiard hit game, you don't get a point. And you won't get hurt if you are hit by your own missile, banking off a barrier. Game 6 is the easy maze. Game 7 is a complex maze. Both of these are direct or billiard hit, so you could do one or the other. Game 8 is an open field. Game 9 is an easy maze. And both of these games are billiard hit only, so you definitely have to bank it in order to get a point. Games 10 through 14 are invisible tanks. Both tanks are invisible. When a missile is fired or a tank is hit by a missile, you'll then see the tank while the fired missile is on screen or during the death throes animation of the tank. You'll also see the tank when you bump into a wall or a barrier. Game 10 is open field, and game 11 is easy maze, and both of these use the guided missiles. Games 12 through 14 is invisible tank pong. The same rules apply as in tank pong, but the tanks are invisible, and they're treated the same way as they are in 10 and 11. And these games are based on luck, in my opinion. Game 12 is the easy maze with the direct or billiard hit, and game 13 is open field. Game 14 is the easy maze, and both of these are billiard hit only. And I guess the based on luck comment would apply to these two games. Games 15 through 27 are the biplanes and the jet fighter games. In these games, you have two different playfields, the open sky and clouds. In the cloud screen, there are two clouds in the center of the screen. You can hide behind them as you fly through, but you can still be hit by a missile if you're behind the clouds. In 2 versus 2 or in 1 versus 3 games, the groups of planes always fly in formation, and each plane shoots its own missile simultaneously. So in 1 versus 3, you have 3 bullets versus the other plane's 1 bullet, or missile. Games 15 through 18 are the single biplane game, so it's one plane versus one plane. Games 15 through 17 have clouds, games 18 has open sky. Game 15 has guided missiles, game 16 has straight missiles, and games 17 and 18 have the machine guns. Game 19 is 2 versus 2 biplanes. It's open sky with guided missiles. And game 20 is 1 versus 3 biplanes, open sky with straight missiles. The single biplane is player 1, and the graphic of the plane is almost as long as the group of the 3 biplanes together. And that makes it look really awkward when the plane turns. Very awkward. Games 21 through 27 are the jet fighter games. The jet graphics actually look like they're top-down, while the biplanes look like it's side-view. Nobody said video games had to make any sense, especially in 1977 when they were just getting started. Unlike the biplanes, the single jet in the 1 versus 3 variation is the same size as each of them in the group of 3, so there are no giant jets. Games 21 and 22 have clouds. Games 23 and 24 have open sky. In games 21 and 23, you have guided missiles for the jets, and games 22 and 24, you have straight missiles. Game 25 is 2 versus 2. You have the two clouds with guided missiles. Game 26 is 1 versus 3. You have open sky with guided missiles, and game 27 is 2 versus 2, open sky with straight missiles. That is basically it. It's a very simple game. It's one you can pick up and play. You don't really need to look at the directions unless you wonder where the tanks went in the invisible tank games. But once you start, you'll figure it out pretty quickly. The early 2600 games had glitches, not really Easter eggs. The first known Easter egg for the 2600, in case you don't know what an Easter egg is, in case you've been living under a rock for the past 30 years, it's something hidden in the game and it was put there on purpose. And the first one was discovered in Adventure by Warren Robinette. And we'll get to Adventure probably sooner than later. That is my favorite Atari 2600 game. Spoilers right there. So these are some of the glitches that were found in combat. And if you go to Scott Stilfen's Atari Compendium page, there's quite a few of them there. But these are the ones I remember from being a kid and ones that I could replicate now. So if you've ever played combat for any length of time, you may have noticed that you can sometimes warp through walls and barriers after your tank is hit, which I alluded to earlier. The tank actually moves back a bit after being hit, and I suppose that it doesn't matter if there's a barrier in the way. It just goes right on through, whoop, just like that. There's a flying tank glitch. If you select game 9, rotate the left tank 180 degrees and then fire. The shot will bounce and hit the opponent, causing both tanks to fly a few screens to the right, and both tanks end up on the left side behind the barrier. I actually remember this happening as a kid, but we could never duplicate it on purpose. There's a long shot glitch in this game. Hold down reset and the fire button on a controller when you're playing an open field tank game, but not the Pong billiard shot variation. If you release the reset while holding the fire button down, the shot will go across the screen and hit your opponent. There's a spinning tanks glitch. If you place your turret flat against the other tank, then move your tank so the turret hits the other tank, both tanks will spin. I haven't been able to replicate this. I'm guessing it's just like when you get shot by the missile. You can also switch places. In game 9 again, this time move the right tank 180 degrees and shoot, and the tanks will switch places. There's a warp shot in game 7. If you position your tank above the barrier in front of you when you start facing left so that your turret lines up with the smaller barrier above, you can fire your missile and it will bounce through the top left-hand corner and come out the right-hand corner hitting your opponent. This one I couldn't do either. I tried and tried and tried, but I guess I couldn't line it up right. There are a few hacks done of combat over the years. I'll put a link to that in the show notes. One of them even has some AI in there, so you can play one player versus the computer, which I think is really cool. I think my favorite one, though, is called Combat Rock, which was done by Paul Slocum. You may know his name. He developed the synth cart for the 2600, which allows you to make music on the system. And he also is in the band Tree Wave. I think when they do live shows, I'm not sure if the band's even together anymore. But when they do live shows, all his instruments are old consoles and computers, and he does all the music, and there's a singer as well. So this hack called Combat Rock plays an Atari 2600 version of Rock the Casbah by The Clash while you play combat. There's none of the game noises, it's just Rock the Casbah. There was a sequel to this game, it's called Combat 2. It was in development, but never released. This game was given a part number, so we'll get to that down the road, so I'm not going to tell you anything about Combat 2. So, The art for Combat was done by the wonderful Cliff Spahn. Cliff Spahn got a Bachelor of Arts degree in Illustration and Graphic Design in 1973 from San Jose State College. He started freelancing for Atari in 1977 through an agency and then later by himself. He created art for Air Sea Battle and Combat and almost 20 other games. And basically, he came up with the look of the early Atari 2600 art, which is very, very special to me. And it would make a great coffee table book someday. In the early 80s, Atari hired more artists to work in-house, and Cliff Spahn moved on to other projects, including Apple Computers, Starbucks, the NFL, Coca-Cola, and many others. Currently, he works in fine art and leans more towards the abstract. So this art for combat, it features four panels of art. The top ones have the planes, of course. The left panel features biplanes attacking or being attacked by a ship. The ship is the only aspect of the art that's not in the game. There's also a missile traveling out of frame on the extreme left. I think the nose of the missile is totally off the art itself. The right panel on the top has four jets in formation, plus another jet above it and in front, with a very red sun right behind it. The rocket smoke trail comes from the left panel and goes to the right panel, and on the initial gatefold box goes all the way up to the top of the box beneath the game title, which is pretty unusual for that time. And this smoke trail was actually removed in later releases. The bottom two panels featured manned tanks and missile fires in the background. On the initial box, the colors are very dark. Lots of red, browns, and oranges, I guess apropos of 1977. There's even a shadow effect behind the art, which makes part of the box even darker. And this shadow effect, too, was removed later, and the art was lightened up a bit. At least it seems so to me. I have the original gatefold box, which I'll get to in a minute, and a couple of the later releases that weren't the gatefold box, and it definitely looks like the art is lighter. Whether this was intentional or a printing error, I have no idea. So the Atari cartridges themselves are black plastic. They're slightly pebbled. It's very hard to tell. You can't feel it, really. And they measure 3 1/8 inch by 3/4 inch by 3 3/4 inches. It has a plastic hinge cover on top to protect the, is it a PROM? The chip? I don't know. Whatever's in there. That plugs into the 2600. It has two tabs sticking out of it, which are flush with the top of the cartridge. And this helps the hinge open when you put it into the cartridge slot. The labels are two-piece, the face label and an end label. The first edition of the labels that Atari put out is commonly known as text labels. The face label is 2 3/4 inches by 3 3/8 inches, and the end is 2 3/4 inches by a little over half an inch. The first label for combat has red and silver printing on the face label and red printing on the end label, and both of these labels have a silver outline. The face label has the game program printed on top with the Fuji symbol and the Atari logo and the part number on the bottom. All this text is in silver. Below game program is the title of the game, and the game variations are listed by number and are all in capital letters. Everything else is in lowercase except for the Atari logo, and all of this text is in red. The end label has the last two digits of the part number on the left side and then the title in red. And this was the way that all the nine launch titles were printed at first, with the last two digits of the part number on the end label. The early manuals are 4 by 6.5 inches. They have a black cover. Combat manual itself is an 8-page stapled manual, and the cover has a slightly cropped version of Cliff Swan's art right in the center. Above the artwork, it says Combat Game Program Instructions. Combat is in white, and the rest of the text is in yellow. At the bottom, you have the Fuji symbol and the Atari logo, plus a very small Warner Brothers logo, with Warner Communications Company printed next to it. Atari's address is below that, and the manual has 1977 copyright date on the front cover. On the back of the manual, it has the game matrix with Combat and 01 on the top. The game matrix showed at a glance what each variation consisted of. These game matrices lasted until about 1982, I think, for new releases. This first manual for Combat has no revision number. Many manuals were revised as they reissued the games and changed the packaging, and the revision number is usually found on the back, but not on the gatefold releases. As I've been saying all this time, the box is a gatefold box. That means it opened up like a book. And Atari did away with this fairly soon after the nine launch titles were released, which is kind of too bad. I think these boxes were easier to keep than the other boxes. They kind of resemble Intellivision boxes. I keep saying this, but that would be cool if there was an Intellivision podcast too. Boy, I'm coming up with all kinds of podcast ideas today. I'm like the Podfather or something. Well, if there was an Intellivision podcast, then I would have to pretend to be mad at them for George Plimpton's Snide commercials. Yeah, yeah. Anyway, back to Combat. The box is red, and the artwork features on the bottom two-thirds of the front cover of the box, for the most part. On top, above the art, it reads Combat Game Program. The title is in larger letters than Game Program. Right above the artwork, it says 27 video games on the left, and then each of the five different variations. The 27 is large, video games is smaller, and all the variations listed are in the smallest text. All this text is in what looks like orange, actually. I don't care for the spines on these gatefold boxes. In my opinion, it's upside down. The text is white. It says Combat in the center, upside down. 01 at top, and the Atari logo and the Fuji logo at the bottom. When you open it up, like I said, it opens up like a book. The inside cover has a slit for the manual. It's either vertical or diagonal. My combat is vertical, but I've seen diagonal ones online, and the other three Gatefold games I have are diagonal. The other side has a recess to fit the cartridge in. There's nothing on the back of the box except the Atari logo and the Fuji symbol, the Warner Brothers logo, the Atari address, and the 1977 copyright. There are a great number of Combat Tech labels, and they're made from paper, plastic, plastic-coated paper, aluminum foil, you name it. After the initial run of games, the font was changed, and it looks like it may have been a bolder version of the previous font. I think it's the Harry font, if I'm not mistaken. The part number is moved to between the title and the variations and colored red briefly, and then went back to silver. Used with joystick controllers was added below the variations, first in red, then in silver. Made in Taiwan is also added to some text label carts that were probably made in Taiwan. How about that? For the black cover manuals, I have revision 3 and 4, aside from the first one in the gatefold box. 3 is slightly different from that first one. A few formatting changes seems to be it. And the matrix itself on the back cover has been turned upside down, and the variations on the top are slanted instead of straight as they originally were. The 01 is removed as well, just as combat. In revision 4, there were some diagrams and special text that had colored square backgrounds, and most of these are removed. Later boxes are also red, but they're changed to the flap top box, no gatefold. Some of them had a half moon cut out in the back to help get the box open. On the front, a video computer system was added between the title and the words game program, and two players was added below the variations. The title, combat, and video computer system are in white text and the rest is in yellow text. On the back of the box, the Atari address and the Warner logo was moved to the top. Moving down the back of the box, the Atari logo and the Fuji symbol are next on the left, and video computer system is right below that. Then the words game program with the variations listed below that. Then two players. There's a line drawing of the CX-40 joystick with an overall explanation on how to use it as well. All the text is in white except for the game program, which is in yellow, and this box is copyright 1978 for some reason. Even later boxes smushed all the info on the back into the top half of the box, and then it had a warranty box at the bottom, and this discusses the 90-day warranty for the cartridge, and also gives repair prices for the hardware and where to send that stuff for repairs. Postage paid, of course. So let's finish the box variations now. Front of the box stayed pretty much the same through all the reissues. Perhaps once the picture labels were released, which I'll get to in a minute, some of the text on the back was changed to a Bauhaus font. The little goose is dead. But it's all the same information. The warranty box was changed. It had a white background instead of being printed right on the red. And it removed the repair prices and added a second address in New Jersey, which I visited as a kid and I will tell you about on a future show. Some boxes removed the warranty box altogether, but mostly they were all copyright 1978. I also found one box which is copyright 1986 by Atari Corporation, but I didn't find a corresponding cartridge or manual yet. The picture labels for Atari games were released in 1981, and most of the previous text label games were redone in this style. The label had a black background and used the Bauhaus font. Cliff Spahn's art is in the middle of the face label. On the top, you have the words game program, and then the title in all caps, and then used with joystick controllers, and these are all on three lines, one line each. The title is in red, and the other text is in white. The Atari logo and the Fuji symbol and the part number are superimposed over the bottom of the art. I forgot to mention this, that this is also true of the box front, and also added the Warner Communications logo into the artwork. Below the art, it reads Label, Program, and Audiovisual, copyright 1987 Atari Inc., and that's in white. The end label was black with the red Bauhaus font for combat. The manual is the big change here. The manual was changed to 5x7 inches and had a white cover instead of black. The artwork takes up most of the front, with the Atari logo and the Fuji symbol, the Warner Communications logo, and the part number across the bottom. On top, you have combat in all caps, the Atari game program instructions in white inside a red stripe, and that's above the artwork. Below the artwork, you have complete gameplay instructions on the left, 27 game variations in the center, and one to two player games on the right. That's lies, just two players. This is a 12-page stapled manual. The copyright date of 1977, back to that, is inside the front cover. These manuals had a table of contents for some reason in case you got lost in the 8 inside pages. Some parts of this manual are rewritten from the original manual, while others are the same. The variations explained inside the manual are given nice colored tables, which weren't in the previous manual, and the game matrix is actually split in two. On the back cover of this manual, the top has the warranty info with 4 addresses this time, all in black text. The bottom text is in red. You have your Atari logo and Fuji symbol, Warner, blah, 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 and the address. You have 2 thin red lines across the bottom, and the revision number is below that. I've only seen revision 1 for combat. That's what I have, and that's what I've seen online. And again, back here it says copyright 1987, Atari Incorporated, made in Taiwan. Was that enough packaging for you? Well, now we're going to do Tank Plus. So as I was alluding to earlier, Sears renamed many of the early Atari games, had their own distinct packaging under the Telegames label. And back then, I thought that these were different, more exotic games from the regular Atari games. I was 10 or younger, so give me a break on that one. Okay, please. I think, did I already say Tank Plus was not the packing for Sears Telegames Arcade? Target Fun, which was the rename of Air Sea Battle, that was the pack-in game. Also with 27 variations, funnily enough. The part number for Tank Plus, this original version, was 699801. The artwork is much different. Sears, in many cases, had different artwork to further differentiate it from Atari's releases, but I'm not sure who did this one. I can't tell from looking at it. There's no signature that I could see. It has a much brighter background than Cliff Spahn's combat art does, for sure. It has a large green tank in the foreground with a white star in the front. There's a dude hanging out of the hatch and he's firing a hatch gun. Is that a thing, a hatch gun? It's the regular big giant turret gun thing that's on... No. Yeah, I guess it would be a turret gun. The thing that turns around on top of a tank is a turret, right? But then where the hatch opens, there's a gun there too. So that's why I'm calling it the hatch gun. That's way too much information, I think. So this guy is firing this gun up into the sky. And this tank is also taking a shot to the guy's right, so obviously not hurting the guy at all. There's another red tank behind it, and that tank is firing from the large tank gun. I guess tank gun is what we settled on. It has a number 7 on the side. I'm not sure what that means. There's a biplane in the sky. It has a red nose for Red Nose Day and trailing smoke, and it's also shooting. Behind the tank, there are 2 jets. One is diving, and it looks pretty close to the ground. And it's going to crash into the ground, and the other is turning a bit, but neither of the jets are firing. So this first issue is also a gatefold box. The cart is the same black plastic as the Atari cartridge with the hinged cover. It's also a text label, but it has a different layout. The first release has a red 27 at the top of the face label for the number of variations. And this is true of all the Sears games that were released as a text label. If it had game variations, that was the first thing you saw on the face. Right below the 27 is the green Telegames logo, and Telegames has a dash between Tele and Games, and it looks like a green calculator readout. This label doesn't have the 5 variation styles like the combat label does, but just the 3 vehicles in the game as bullet points, tanks, jets, and biplanes, which is kind of weird. I never noticed that before until I did the research for this episode. And right below that, it says for 2 players. At the very bottom left, you have Sears, Roebuck & Company in plain text, and the very bottom right, you have the part number, which I mentioned already. There's no title on the face label for some reason. It's only on the end label, and it's in red. I'm not really sure what this font is, though. It's very different from the Harry and Bauhaus. Not very different, it's a little bit different. The S is very noticeable. The manual is the same size as the Atari manual, also has a black cover and is an 8-page stapled manual, but it's a little bit different. You have your white Sears logo on top of the front cover. Then it says Telegames Tank Plus Game Instructions. Telegames is in white and the rest of the text is in yellow here. The artwork is in the middle and has a large yellow 27 on the bottom right straddling the artwork and the black background. And Games appears next to the 27 in the black part of the manual in small white letters. And for 2 players is to the left of the 27. And the part number also appears here below the word games. Inside the manual, it's pretty much the same as the Atari manual. Some parts have been slightly rewritten. Actually, the difficulty switches on the Sears Telegames Arcade are labeled Novice and Expert instead of B and A, so this obviously had to be changed. The matrix on the back of this manual is the second version, with the slanted game variations that did not appear in the first version of the combat manual, which is kind of weird. Another thing I never noticed before. The box is all black. All the Sears games had black boxes. Reads Telegames Tank Plus at top, followed by the five variation types. Below the artwork, which here has a thick rounded border, says for two players on the left and then 27 games on right, again with a giant yellow straddling 27. Tank Plus is also in yellow and the rest of the text is white. The back of the box is printed as landscape instead of portrait like on the front. Tank Plus Telegames cartridge is written along the top. And below that to the left, you have a CX-40 line drawing and a description on how to use it. I think it's the same one as on the Atari version of Combat. Most of the back is taken up with the game matrix from the manual, which was a peculiar trait of the early Sears games. They always had the game matrix on the back. You have the Sears logo below the matrix, and then addresses for Sears in the US and Canada. I guess the home offices. Inside the gatefold, you have a diagonal slit for the manual, and warranty info appears here right above the slit, printed right on the box. Subsequent releases of Tank Plus were all text labels. Used with joystick controllers was added to the face label. Otherwise, that label is the same. Another one had the red 27 changed to orange, and program contents copyright 1977 by Atari was also added to the face label. And this part number was changed to 4975124. There were some of these early Sears games with the text labels that did get a picture label later, but this was not one of them. There has been a face label found, though, on Atari Mania. The label's all black, has the art in the middle. Across the top, you have the Sears logo and then the Telegames logo. Tank Plus is below that, and Tank has an asterisk after it, and we'll get to the asterisk very soon, and I'm not saying asterisk right. Then it has used with joystick controllers below that. Then below the artwork, it's Sears Roebuck & Company, and then another new part number, 4975101. At the very bottom, you have your asterisk here, and it says, indicates registered trademark of Atari copyright 1976. So we've got three different dates. I did find a flat top box with the same front, but the back is in portrait layout, and a small warranty info box is added to the bottom, making the game matrix much smaller. So for rarity, I use the Atari Age Rarity Guide and the Digital Press Rarity Guide, even though I know the Digital Press Rarity Guide has not been updated in a number of years. I like to have both. On Atari Age, they give the 01 label of Combat a rarity of 2. They give the text and picture label a rarity of 1. And then Tank Plus, for both text labels, gets a rarity of 2. On Digital Press, just straight up Combat gets a rarity of 1. They don't go by labels. And Tank Plus gets a rarity of 2. So as you would expect, since this is such a common game, was a pack-in game up until 1983, I think. That's when Pac-Man was added as the pack-in game. Get it? Pack-in game? Pac-Man? Anyway, there are a lot of... There were 6 pages altogether of combat, and only had two or three results that were space combat, which is, I think, Space War. So... I would venture a guess that half of these were in lots because nobody wants to buy a single combat unless it's in a box, and this kind of bears that out a little bit. So let's start with the Combat 01 label. The only loose one I found went for $2.95, and there were quite a few CIB copies that sold in the last 90 days. They varied from $11.99 up to $19.99. Most of them were the $19.99 price range. For the regular text label, it went anywhere from 1 cent, which had no end label, and the shipping was actually pretty reasonable for that. The shipping was $2.85. I don't include shipping in my prices, though, because the shipping varies too wildly to include it. So, as I said, the low end was 1 cent, the high end was $3.99. Basically, it was really all across the board here. There were a lot of 99-cent ones. There was one for a quarter. So if you're looking for a loose text label combat, you're probably going to pay $2 to $3. Cart manual combos for the text label. One of them sold for $4.05. That was with a white manual, not the original black manual. And that was the high one because it, I guess it was the white manual. But the other one sold between $2 and $3. $1.99 to $2.99, basically. CIB copies. This was very plentiful. Anywhere from $1.04 up to $10.99. The $10.99 also came with the white manual. There was another one with a white manual that sold for $9.50. All the other ones came with the black manual. If you want that, I would say the median price is between $5 and $6. There were a couple high and low ones, but that probably varied on quality of the actual box itself. Not too many picture labels. They varied from 49 cents all the way up to $4.18. Somebody paid $4.18 for Combat. I forgot to check if that had shipping on it or not. I hope it didn't. Basically, it looks like it's going to be around $3. There were a couple $1 copies, but $2.88, $3.59, $3, $3.99. Weird. The only other picture label I found was a CIB that sold for $9.99. I did also look up Tank Plus. That only had 8 hits. There were a couple of those were lots. No loose copies of Tank Plus, except in lots. There was a cart and manual combo that sold for $9.95. And there was also CIB copies. They were all gatefold copies, and they sold for $8.96, $10.94, and $11.80, which is probably a pretty decent price for this game. I didn't find any CIB flap top copies of Tank Plus on eBay, at least none that had sold.
Attention shoppers, the new Atari cartridge game is in.
Excuse me.
Uh-oh, doors again.
Ooh, Atari's ASCII battle.
It comes with 27 games, but that's just the starters. You can get 9 cartridges, 187 games.
Blackjack!
I'd like an Atari.
Sorry, only our demonstrators left.
Mine!
No, George. Mine.
The new video computer system by Atari. More games, more fun.
So I got my Atari in 1980 for Christmas, as I mentioned in the last show. Got this game with it. 3 other games, Space Invaders, Human Cannonball, and Skydiver. I had just turned 11. My sister was 5 years old, and we actually got it at my cousin's house. They were the ones who had Pong. That was the first time I played Pong, but I didn't really get into it too much. I know I did play it. I remember playing it quite a bit there, but I don't know if I ever asked for Pong when we left their house. I don't think I ever did. But we played a lot of Atari that Christmas vacation, and then after that, when we brought it home, my sister and I played it a lot, including Combat. The game is still fun as long as you have 2 people. I did ask my wife Sarah to help me out with this so I could get the sounds for the stereo version, so at least you can hear the 2 tanks or the 2 planes together. She does not like this game because of the sound in it. She doesn't like a lot of 2600 games because of the sound, especially Miniature Golf and Superman. She hates those games, but I love those games so much. usually I play the games by myself, though, but for this one, I needed help to get the sounds. The graphics, as you would expect, it's a 2K game. It was developed along with the system. You know, they don't know the ins and outs of the system yet. They're kind of blocky, but they're not bad. I think the worst one was the giant biplane. That was just, it looked horrible. It looked, I don't know what, it didn't look right. The jets looked pretty good. The tanks are simple. They look pretty good, turning and everything. I mean, you know, the barriers are blocky, the clouds are blocky. It's blocky. It's 2K, it's blocky. But the gameplay is there. It's a lot of fun to play. And like I said, Sarah's not a fan of the noisy 2600 games, but I am. I love the sounds in this game, especially the Pong sounds when the tank engine going in the background and the flying sounds of the plane. I just love the sounds of the 2600. It especially this game takes me back to when I was a kid. So I think almost everyone in my neighborhood that was my age or a little younger or a little older had an Atari. I know one weird kid named Danny had an Odyssey 2, but in our neighborhood, that was it. He was the only outsider, I guess you would call him. And back then, playing video games, including going to the arcade, we called it playing Atari. I used to go to my next door neighbor Frank's house to play Atari, and he was a lot better than me at all the games. There was one afternoon, I remember, he had I think it was a porch that they enclosed, and it wasn't like a screened-in porch, it was just like a regular I think they built a garage and the porch together. But that's where the TV was, where we played Atari. So the floor was kind of concrete. So one day we were playing combat and he kept beating me. So I got very frustrated with the game and I threw the joystick on the floor. I mean, we were sitting on the floor, so it didn't go very far. But he told his mom, and I was not allowed to play Atari at his house ever again. So his loss, in my opinion. I had Kenny and Pam and Mitchell and Kelly and Rosie and all those people that I played Atari with. So when I used to go to the NAVA meetings at Mike Etler's store, NAVA is North Atlantic Video Game Aficionados. That was started by Mike Etler at his store. And that was, I guess, when I first started meeting other collectors. Mike Etler closed the store years ago, and Joe Santulli, who's the owner of the digital press store in Clifton, New Jersey, he took over the NAVA meetings, and they have them every month, the last Saturday of every month, still to this day. I think the NAVA meetings at Mike's was geared more towards classic game collectors, while Joe's is more for everyone. So keep that in mind if you want to go. But I do definitely suggest that you take a look at Digital Press if you're ever in the area. They have a lot of great stuff there. So at Mike Etler's store, when I used to go, they used to talk about or joke about a combat clock. And if I'm remembering this right, somebody was going to make a giant clock with all the different variations of the combat cartridge at each number. And I actually started collecting combat variations to do this, but I never got around to it. But another clock idea that I had was to use the Sears text label cards with the giant game variation number on it. But unfortunately, not all the numbers were represented, so I couldn't do that either. So if you want to play combat now, the Atari flashbacks have it on there. Big surprise. I think it started at number 2. And what are they on? Number 4 now? It's on each of those. Also, I think Combat 2 is on all of the ones that have combat. Well, maybe just the last one. Let me check. Hold on a second. Nope, Combat and Combat 2 are on the Atari Flashback 2, 3, and 4. You know, it'd be really good. I mean, they put out the first one? The 7800-looking one. It had some 7800 games. I wish they would put out a handheld one. That would be really cool. Especially if it had, like, if you could put a cartridge in it or something, where you could, kind of like the Harmony cart, where you can plug in maybe like a SD card or something. You could put all the games on there and play all the games instead of just the Atari ones. Like the, what was it called? The Atari's Greatest Hits, I believe, for the DS. Those are pretty good, but it's hard to play some of the paddle games on there. It's not really made for that. But you can play Combat and Combat 2 on the DS if you'd like. That's on Volume 2 of Atari's Greatest Hits. So I'm very happy to say that we actually got some listener feedback this week. So thank you guys so much for sending them in. I didn't really expect any for this first game, but I'm glad that I got them. I got an email from Pedro, and Pedro says, I didn't actually own a VCS in its heyday, but my uncle did. Due to family issues, I had to go stay with his family for a few months back in 1985. The 2600 sat gathering dust in the adult bedroom with nary a look in its direction. The thing called out to me every time I passed and saw it through the gap whenever the door was left ajar. One day I gained the courage to ask if I could have a play on it. To my joy, my uncle gladly let me play it, but had to be used in the bedroom as nobody else gave a toss about the thing. So I would spend hours sitting on my auntie and uncle's bed playing Space Invaders and the like. I was so desperate to play combat, but sadly, I had no one to play with. It was so frustrating. Why was I the only one who saw the great potential fun in this game? I desperately tried to play the thing on my own, but it was never much fun. I agree with you there. Do you know, after all these years, I've still to play the bloody game with another person? Wow. Well, if I was there, Pedro, I would definitely play with you. Maybe sometime. I don't know if any of the emulators, if they have like online play. I know that one of the NES emulators did. I don't think it does, though. That would be good if somebody could set that up. I don't know how feasible it would be, but it would be cool if we could play online the Atari games. But thank you very much, Pedro, for the email. I greatly appreciate it. Also got an email from Rob O'Hara. Of course, I mentioned him before, the host of the Great You Don't Know Flack podcast. And he says, I was the first person I knew with an Atari 2600, and so Combat, being the packing game, was my first exposure to the system. We spent a lot of time as a family playing Combat. If I recall, it doesn't have a one-player mode, so you always needed a second person around to play. I guess we've come full circle in that aspect. We started out with games that require two players, then for a long time we played video games by ourselves, and now we're back to playing games with other people again, except now it's with people online mostly, just like what I was saying before with Pedro. I think what made Combat such a great game was that very little depended on the player's skill or mastery of the controls. It wasn't like Mortal Kombat, where someone who knew all the secret moves could pummel you mercilessly. That's a very good point. After a minute or two of playing Combat, you know everything there is to know about controlling your tank or airplane. After that, it's all about skill and strategy and luck. That is very true. Rob, thank you so much for writing in. Thanks for all your help with the podcast and for tweeting about it. It really helped me out a lot, and I'm very grateful to you. So thank you very much, Rob. I actually got an audio submission this week. It's from a guy in England named Rob. So let's hear what Rob has to say about Combat.
Hello, my name's Rob. I'm from the UK, and I thought I'd send in some thoughts about the first game that you're doing, Combat. I'm here with my youngest son.
Hi.
And as you have a nickname, Ferg, I thought maybe I'd call myself Strudders, which is an old school nickname for me, and we could call you Mini Strudders, yeah?
Yeah, okay.
So back in the day, I used to play this game with my best friend. He had an Atari, I didn't, but I used to spend a lot of time around there playing Combat and lots of other games with him. So, you know, it was quite an amazing thing, this Atari, when it came out. And it was state-of-the-art graphics and everything. I know that's hard to believe with you, with your Minecraft and your Wii U and things like that.
Roblox,
yeah. So, yeah, let's have a go. Let's turn it on. So you can see that the game is just like two tanks opposing each other.
Yeah, I think I saw it before.
Yeah, you have seen it before.
Yeah, I think I did, yeah.
So, it's only a two-player game, so you can't play against the computer.
Okay.
It's got lots of different variations, so this is the most simple one here.
Okay.
This is just like shooting each other in a straight line. I'll just turn it down.
Yeah, I shot you.
Alright, I wasn't even playing you, cheat. There you go. But let's make it a bit more interesting. Let's add a maze.
Okay.
So...
Hammer and Tora Stone.
Alright, let me sarcastic.
There we go. How did I do that?
That's good, wasn't it? And then you can have different shape mazes.
Oh, I like that one. I want that one.
Alright, well let's make it a bit more interesting with bouncing bullets, yeah?
Okay.
So you call it tank pong.
Tank pong? Is that actually real?
That's what they call it on the cartridge, yeah.
Tank pong.
It's got nothing to do with smelly tanks.
What?
Well, pong means smell, doesn't it, as well? Anyway.
Oh, yeah, no, I mean...
So, yeah, this makes it a bit more exciting, doesn't it?
Yay!
How can you be beating me?
Yeah, for
the...
Aha. I know, how did you do that? Me and you're so near me.
Oh, come on.
There
you go. Okay, so let's try a different one.
Okay.
Let's try this one. See what you make of this one. There you go.
Ah.
You can only see your tank when you fire.
But does it have a maze as well?
You can do the maze as well.
No, don't. Please don't, no.
Oh, hang on. I've gone into the aeroplane ones now.
No, don't. Dad, don't do the maze thing.
Why?
No, it's not really hot.
Oh, right. No, that's invisible tank pong.
What?
Just put a maze in. Come, it's much better of a maze. You've got stuff to bounce off of than that. Oh. Well, that's not bouncing.
Well, how are we meant to know where we are? That's so weird.
Hang on, let's do it with... like that. That's invisible tank pong.
Yeah, and that gives you more time because it bounces and stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
That's more... no, that's more great.
More great.
More great.
More better, even. Oh!
Yay! How did I do that? I wasn't even care. I didn't even care.
No, that's normally the best thing to do in this game. Just...
ah!
Oh, come on!
No!
Right next to you.
No! No!
It's so close.
No, so close! Did I get you?
No, not yet.
Yay!
Oh, you're next to me now.
Ah!
No!
Did I got you by behind me?
No, I got you.
No, run! Run! How did you get me?
Just by luck. Okay, look, so quickly, anyway, let's have a look at the aeroplane one. So,
what'd you do in the aeroplane one?
Well, you're an aeroplane and I'm an aeroplane. We've got to shoot each other, so...
that's awesome!
It's up and down to steer, yeah?
It is a clouds.
And you can steer the bullets.
You steer the bullets?
You can steer the bullets once you shoot them. You can steer them, you see?
Oh, that's so cool!
Makes it handy, doesn't it?
Ah! I thought you were going to take out a map. Yay! I'm so good at this!
No, I've got you.
What, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
You don't you realise that you're pink?
Oh. I thought I was green.
What, all that time?
Yeah.
Even when we were doing the tanks?
Yeah.
Oh, you great doofer. That's because I swapped the joysticks, remember?
I get confused,
remember?
Because you keep telling me...
I swapped the joysticks because this one is the bad one. I didn't want you to have the bad
one.
Yeah,
and this one is really bad.
No, it's not.
That's
fine.
Yeah.
So,
oh, yes,
all right, hang on, last game then. So it's more shooting and, you know, double planes.
Double plane, okay. Okay. Mm. Yeah. Okay. Wow, what happened? Wow.
There you go. And then a big plane. You're the big plane, I'm the little ones. Yeah?
It's like a... how am I supposed to get you?
It's a strange blob, doesn't it?
No! Yay!
You got me, you see?
Ah, I thought
okay,
this was...
this is jet fighters, so...
yay! I love jet... did I bump into you?
No, you don't bump into each other. I just shot you as I got near you.
And I was so annoyed. How okay. did you do that?
Skill. So...
skill.
Double jet fighters.
Yeah. So a lot of mazes and everything.
So that's all the different games on the cartridge. So, yeah, like I say, when this came out, this was... absolutely amazing. I know that you might find that hard to believe, but you can still have fun with it, can't you? Even, like, well, 40 years after it was made, because it was like 77 it came out.
Mm-hmm.
Cool, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Okay then, Ferg. So, Strudders and Mini Strudders will try and send in some more feedback as you cover the games. Thanks a lot. See you later.
Bye.
Thank you so much, guys. Strudders it is. Strudders and Mini Strudders, thank you very much for sending in the audio submission. I appreciate it. I will let Back in the Day go this time, since it's your first offense, but you definitely have to put a quarter in the don't jar. Don't forget that. I know some people just use the phrase by accident, but I don't like it, and I will never like it. So there. But I really love that you're showing these games to your son. I see that a lot on the forums, that people who played it back... Oh, almost said it. People who played it back in the 80s are showing their kids now, and their kids are actually having fun with it. So that's always good to hear. I love the I'm an airplane, you're an airplane, we shoot each other line. That was great. That made me laugh. Well, I hope to hear from you again, Rob. Maybe you can... Hey, here's an idea for you. Maybe you could rate the game, since I don't like rating the games, but if I know people do like that, giving it a numerical value for some reason, I don't know why. But if you feel like doing that and you want to contribute to the show, that would be great. So thank you, Strutters and Mini Strutters, for the audio submission. So that is going to do it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate it. We got a long way to go, and I hope that you'll go with me, I guess. I do have a format change already, since I'm looking at the recording, and this show is a little less than, probably going to be a little less than 20 minutes. So I think what I'm going to do is go up to 2 games every week. So next week it'll be Air Sea Battle and Starship. I'm sure that if I do 2 games every week, I'll be done in a lot shorter time, because, doing 2 games a week would be fine. There won't be any problems there. So if you would like to email me for the podcast, if you have any stories about Air Sea Battle or Starship or even Combat, I'm happy to read any feedback on the show for games I've already covered. You can send that to 2600gamebygame@comcast.net. Or you can go to Facebook and leave a message on the podcast page, which is at www.facebook.com/2600gamebygamepodcast. I'm also on Twitter. You can find me there at @2600gamebygame. And you can check out the show notes on my blog page, which is at 2600gamebygamepodcast.blogspot.com. The podcast is on iTunes, so if you like the podcast, please go there and subscribe, and you can leave a review there too. Thank you very much to Joe Matros for his extremely kind permission to use the song Das Limpet as our theme song. You can hear more Joe's music at soundcloud.com/Joe Matros. Thanks always to Sarah and Kurt, and thank you all for listening. As I said, I greatly appreciate it, and I will see you next week with Air Sea Battle and Starship. Take care, everybody, and please be kind to one another.
Recorded live from the bathroom in Felton, Delaware, this has been a Prooptronics Cellular production.